It is Saturday, April 22nd, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today, after a spot of geek news, we'll talk about Web 2.0 appliances or applications with Think Free Inc.
GeekSpeak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool. Eliminate the minis and the twits.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during our show are not necessarily those of KOSP. Today, we are joined by Jonathan Crow, product manager at Think Free Inc. We'll talk about their online office solution. You can edit Word, Excel, and PowerPoint documents online for free, and they're launching this product in full swing on Monday. So we're doing a pre-release release. Pretty cool. During the second half of the show, I'll welcome you to join our conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or contact us now. Get in the queue by going to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. This is GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Miles Elam, technical trainer at Surf Control, and Sean Cleveland, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA. Welcome, geeks.
Good morning.
Good morning, Lyle.
Before we get into our discussion, I think your mic's going to be dead, Sean, unfortunately. Stop touching it for a second. Let's try it one more time. You there?
Yeah.
Okay, don't touch that. Don't touch that dial. Looks like a bad circuit. Too bad there's no geeks in the house to fix it. In any case, before we start talking about Web 2.0 applications and this really cool suite by Think Free with Jonathan, let's talk about some geek news. Miles, I'd like to start with you, sir, since your mic's actually working. And
in theory. In the past, we've always talked about using other browsers such as Firefox, Mozilla, Safari. Opera is another web browser. It's hitting version 9. The beta has gone public for download, and I think it'll be interesting for folks to try that out. Because it has as part of its feature set among things like content blocking, pop-up blocking, which we're all used to in tabs. It also has the ability to download files through BitTorrent, so file sharing just directly within the web interface.
I hear Firefox is working on that, but
And a set of widgets, so being able to make little small programs that work on your desktop. I guess it would be similar in principle to Apple's desktop. Desktop widgets.
Right.
Or the dashboard widgets.
Sure.
And, just trying out a different browser. No browser is the best for everyone, but, try out a different one, see if it fits what you're doing. And if the browser market is split up between multiple vendors, it means that no one particular vulnerability will affect them all. So it's a really good thing in terms of,
I guess, keeps them competitive.
Yeah, to take a biological stands on it. It's good for biodiversity or good for technodiversity within the browser
I just
community.
I heard this amazing thing on NPR about corn and the United States reliance on corn. Just this one product is in everything we eat, and it's even in gasoline now because of ethanol, and it's just everywhere. It's very pervasive. And the idea that it's dangerous because it's one species, basically, that's so pervasive. So you're saying a browser shouldn't be that way either. We shouldn't dedicate all our food on one browser, but you should spread it around.
Well, many of the vulnerabilities we've had where, for example, every Windows computer gets hit or, 90% of companies get hit by something, that is because of a monoculture.
Sure.
It is because everyone has the same type of operating system, same type of browser, same type of environment.
There's one more thing about Opera that's very nice. If you're running OS 9, Macintosh OS 9, you can actually download a new browser in that. I believe they're still building for that. You can confirm that while I switch over a conversation, and thank you very much to Mr. Cleveland. Hi, Sean.
Good morning, Lyle.
How you doing, man? Besides the mic all freaky, how you doing?
I'm okay.
Good, good.
Yeah, glad you're a little here. More sleep.
Yeah, we were up late last night.
Geeking
out.
So, there's birds, big uproar this past week about Philips releasing an anti-commercial skip tuner technology for their future...
A what, I'm sorry?
Anti-commercial skip tuner technology.
Okay, so you're
talking... So it's a little hardware device that goes into TiVo-like devices. And keep in mind that Philips manufactures the majority of personal video recorders on the market. So they've invented a device that allows... And what it does is it forces your station to stay. If a commercial comes on, you have to actually sit there through the whole commercial. It actually forces the channel.
What about if you change stations?
You can't change stations, and you can't fast forward. So you'll be locked into watching commercials.
And if it's a PVR, it's going
to... huge uproar.
And if it's
this.
A PVR, it's going to be recorded, too.
No, honestly, it's going to turn back to how it was. Oh, commercial's on. I guess I'll go to the bathroom now or go get some chips.
If you were recording,
you're assuming that people are not too lazy to get up.
No, that's what people used to do.
No, people used to sit there and they had the chips in the beginning of the show and they just sit there and watch.
There were three channels. And
yeah, you changed stations.
That was a big deal about the Super Bowl, was that you had these commercials that people were actually sitting down and wanting to watch, as opposed to getting up and doing whatever they needed to do.
So this is pretty funny. So if you're forced to watch a commercial, at the end of the commercial, you decide, oh, got to change the channel before the next commercial starts.
Oh,
I don't even know how that would happen because they go right up into the next
what
one.
What if you
if you channel into a new
commercial.
A commercial, you're stuck.
So anytime if you're flipping channels and you get a commercial, you have to stop and wait. That's horrible.
So Philip responded to this anti-commercial skip uproar. I mean, there was quite an uproar
that's
from what I understand.
Uh-huh.
And they said, well, the patent says the broadcasters can decide whether or not to allow viewers the freedom of choice depending on whether they are paying a fee to watch a program or a channel.
Wait, so which is which, though? If you're paying for the thing, you don't have to
If you're paying for it, then I guess they let you change the channel. So, just, you know...
I'm sorry, the whole concept of they let you change the channel.
In your own living room, they will let you.
See, I wonder how many of those units they'll sell.
That's bad. I mean, you know, I understand why they're trying to do it. You heard about the whole thing about releasing new TV content. And the commercials won't be skippable. So you can get TV content through the web and see the show, but the commercial will be, it won't be able to be fast-forwarded. And of course, anytime someone says, this codec doesn't allow you to do blah, 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 then of course, within a week and a half, someone figures out how to do blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So it's just a matter of time. But
so if there's an endorsement inside of a television show, can you turn channels during that endorsement?
I don't know. Oh, you mean someone's drinking Coke in the background?
Like, I can't turn the channel. Oh, someone's drinking Coke.
Man, you sure would be really aware of
Where does it end, you know?
Advertising. Thank you, Mr. Cleveland. Mr. Elam, Miles, hi.
I couldn't find any information on which platforms Opera supported.
But good.
I realized I did forget to put out the URL, www.opera.com.
All right.
But anyway.
Who's editing the show page for today's show? Ms. Cleveland?
I guess I... Yeah.
All right, so you can go ahead and add that to the end of the page.
Miles has skills.
You know, we got some web apps running finally on geekspeak.org. It happened in March or so, and now we're finally able to like create content as the show flows, which is kind of liberating because when we say, oh, we'll put that URL up later, no, we'll do it right now, Miles.
Well, I won't be doing it right now because I have another story to give, actually.
Please do.
And this is something I talked about with you guys the other night, but there was a game... released in 1992 called Star Control.
All you talked about the other night.
It was a great game. In fact, GameSpot was labeling it as one of the best games ever made. And it was something that I just have all these great memories about. And there's been some talk about making a sequel to it, having the original authors of this game get back together and do stuff with it. But in addition to that, if for folks wanting to do some retro action with games, it was released to open source in 2002. So at sc2.sf.net or sourceforge.net.
Which you're about to link from our
site. Yes, I will. It's this... I'm sorry, I just have to push
it. Because
it's this great game where it's an open-ended, you're exploring the galaxy.
Can I make a synopsis of it? I think it
has some really cheesy techno music. It's great.
It's kind of like Asteroids. It feels that way. Except you get to pick the different types of ships, and you encounter other types of ships, and all of them have their strengths and their weaknesses. So it's kind of about understanding the how they can fight each other.
Well, except that it's not all about fighting. That
it's
was just
also,
a portion that I saw.
It's a major plot line.
Right. And it's absolutely hilarious.
What's the news here?
they released it. Well, what is the?
Well, because there was also a recent release getting it working on Macs, PCs, Linux, with
I
remastered.
Think the news is that Miles likes this game. Let's tell the entire coast of California.
If someone else had written an article saying, like, hey, there's this new game out there, then it would have been okay. But if I come across it, it's not. Come on.
No, we appreciate it.
Can you play other people online yet?
There is a version that people are trying to work on to get TCP/IP networking working.
For a free game, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's a cool game. And the keyboard, I mean, you can still play in dual mode with two people at the same computer, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. So you both share a keyboard and get to fight each other. And
right. So in that sense, it's more communal. It's not just like some random person.
All right, so what's the name of the game again?
Star Control 2. Or actually, the game is the Urquan Masters. But
the Urquan Masters, Star Command.
Star Control.
Star Control 2.
Yeah.
And you can learn more about that at geekspeak.org. Click on today's show.
It was written by aliens.
Course, the 22nd
and the best person on Earth will be beamed up to the alien to fight for them. Oh, I'm sorry, that was a movie.
All right, you want to do one more news story?
Yeah, so right. HD DVD was launched this past week. Drives are now available from Toshiba. They'll cost you a lot of money or an extreme amount of money.
Depending on if you want one that works.
Depending on how much you want to spend. The big news here is that it's beat Blu-ray to the market. Though it's not supposed to be out for another month or two. And as we all know, the first technology that hits, you know, has a big head start over anything else.
Though Betamax hit before VHS. And it was better.
Well, that's the thing. This is exactly what's going on here. It's the VHS Betamax battle. And if you don't know which one's going to win, you could spend a lot of money and end up with the paperweight in the end.
So let's do the geek recommendation of weight.
Well, so Seven Studios are currently backing Blu-ray, which means that you'll start seeing, you know, high definition DVDs for Blu-ray, you know, drives from seven major studios. Three support HD DVD, which is the technology that was just launched by Toshiba. Two of those also support Blu-ray. The only holdout is Universal Studios, who is supporting HD DVD exclusively. So if you've got favorite movies from Universal Studios that you want to get in high definition, you have to go with HD DVD.
Which is now released.
If content is going to, you know, be... If that's what's going to drive people to one standard, then it looks like Blu-ray's got most of it. So.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
So in a couple of years, we'll have one format that has every movie that you want, and the other format will have My Heavenly Dog.
Right. Something else to keep in mind.
Something great to look forward to.
Blu-ray is also going to be in the PlayStation 3 when it ships from Sony.
So it'll have a giant distribution.
Yeah.
What's the next Xbox using, do you know?
Xbox was just released.
Yeah, so they're not going to be.
They have DVD capability, but not HD DVD.
Sean Cleveland, thank you very much. Miles Elam, thank you very much. Let's continue our conversation, but now let's invite Jonathan Crow, Director of Marketing for Think Free Inc. Jonathan has worked for Think Inc. for a while, and he used to work for School Messenger, which is an education telephony service company, and before that, Hewlett Packard, where he directed communications projects, developed cross-media content, and managed trade show presentations. Jonathan holds a BA in politics from University of California at Santa Cruz, and I'm assuming that's how you came to Santa Cruz.
Absolutely.
It's wonderful to have guests in the audience. Jonathan, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Well, thank you.
So, Web 2.0, define it for us, please, sir.
Well, Tim O'Reilly defined it. He's the guru of Web 2.0 and...
The owner of O'Reilly Books, exactly. Which is a major book company for geek heads.
Exactly. And he listed a number of things that were Web 1.0, which were static content and out there for everyone. But Web 2.0 made it more dynamic. He talked about Web 2.0 as not having hard boundaries, but sort of this magnetic core that everyone kind of develops around. So it's a lot more about being able to collaborate with other people.
So it's kind of a philosophical discussion about social software, and it's also kind of about the technology like Ajax that we hear a lot about that's being used in that space.
Absolutely, and open APIs, mashups, things like that.
Yeah, and mashups are basically taking other people's backends and adding front ends that are interesting. A good mashup, for example, is a showing IP addresses where they are on a Google Maps. So you can put in your IP address and the traceroute actually shows up as points on a map of the country. That's using Google Maps, and it's also using another company that provides IP. And then when you put them together, that's called a mashup. Now, examples of Web 2.0 applications, the Google email client, the Yahoo email client, Google Maps, Yahoo Maps, all have this kind of, you're at the web page, and as you use it, you have more and more data, and it seems to scroll forever across the continent for the maps, mm-hmm. and you're never really changing the website, and it seems to be much more responsive. You might add and delete entries, and new content shows up on the page you're currently editing. That's all kind of Ajax-supported Web 2.0, and then the whole idea of making the interface very open. A great example of this would be Flickr, the image sharing place where, you know, my homepage has images of Flickr, and I actually upload them to Flickr, and my homepage changes. So it's kind of very separate but connected. That's kind of what Web 2.0 is. Okay, yeah. So a couple companies are doing word processing online or document management stuff online, and there's a few others besides Think Free. Let's talk about yours, though. You can upload a Word document, Excel document, PowerPoint document, and start editing it. What's the technology kind of loosely that allows you to do that?
Well, there are two types of technology that we use. We use a combination of Ajax and Java. And so for people that want to get up and running and be actually able to get to work, we have a preview feature which converts your PPT, doc, XLS documents into HTML.
Those are the final file formats of those three applications.
Exactly. And so you can view those using HTML. And then we have a power edit mode, which drops down into the Java technology so that you have an extremely familiar interface. There's no learning curve involved. You can do pretty much everything that you need to do in Microsoft Office, Word, mm-hmm. Excel, PowerPoint.
Online.
Exactly.
And to use these applications, you do have to have an internet connection, correct?
Yes, we do have an offline version, but what we're really talking about these days is our online version, which is going to be released on April 24th, Monday.
Right, and thank you very much for coming on the show and talking about this 2 days before your release. I appreciate that quite a bit. The Java piece, what I'm assuming you take that same bundle and you put that in the local client.
Exactly.
You have an application, basically, a local application that competes directly with Word.
Yes.
Microsoft's, you know, one of its premier flagship docs. Yeah. And this is cross-platform?
Yes, it is. It runs on Linux, Mac, and...
How do you think Microsoft feels about something like this?
Well, actually, I forget when it was, but it was sometime in 2000, I think. And I forgot his last name right now. But anyway, one of the major bigwigs at Microsoft pointed to us as a possible interruption in their service. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, are we going to replace Microsoft? I don't think so.
Well, you know, I've heard whispers that Microsoft, you know, its future products will have more internet connectivity. There'll be more relationships to service providing versus browser support.
Right.
Versus applications that, you know, get installed. More like a... You kind of sign up with a contract with them and you get the application. That's kind of the Web 2.0 paradigm for currency, I mean, for funding recently. How do you do your... How are you dealing with your making money kind of thing on this? This is a business, so how do you do it?
Yeah, we have actually four different product lines. We have the online version, which is free. And we also have the desktop version. We also have a portable version that runs on U3 smart drives.
And U3 smart drives, like smartphones?
USB smart drives that you can plug. U3 is a company that came up with applications that actually run on this smart drive.
And so it's a USB fob that you install on your machine,
exactly.
And then your machine sees it as an application and can run it and edit things. So
exactly.
You take your tools with you.
Exactly.
Okay. So there's the portable version, which is that, which means you can just go to any computer and use it. Mm-hmm. And then there's the downloadable version. Uh-huh. And then there's the web versions, and you said there was four. So what are
the other version is the desktop version. And one more portable one that I think is really cool is we have a version for iPod. Our Think Free Show, which is the presentation software, actually gets installed to the iPod, runs from the iPod, and you can also take presentations and export them out to the iPod.
For the iPod video.
or slideshow.
Uh-huh. Great.
So you can actually present from your iPod.
Wow, that makes it a lot easier to do a speak in front of an audience.
Exactly. And then we have a server version, so for corporations to install it on their intranet and run it within their secure connection.
So we should go through a couple scenarios with the online free version that's shipping on Monday.
Yeah, this is a fun version to play with.
So let's say you ship a Word document to your mother and she does not have Office on her computer.
Mm-hmm.
What can she do with this?
She can upload it to our online version, and she can read it, edit it, make changes, do whatever you want. One of the really cool things in...
Can she save it?
Yes.
Once she's made changes, she can save it to her hard drive?
Yes, she can save it to our online storage space. One of the things that we do is, starting on Monday, we're actually going to give people 1 gigabyte of free storage online. So she could either save it there.
Which is good if she goes to maybe a coffee shop and sits on a computer that's not hers.
Sure.
She can access the document there.
Yeah, the interesting thing to me is that people are living their lives more and more online. Mm-hmm. My wife hates computers, but she checks her email over the web. And she, just to be honest, she probably doesn't know the difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, can you then save this document outside of your space to your local computer?
Yes, you can download it back to you.
What about formats? Can you like make a PDF out of it or anything of that nature?
You can convert it to PDF. We're also going to add other conversions to SVG, which is vector graphics.
Okay. That. So are you planning on having this free version, the web free version, free for a long time?
Yes. We are going to introduce a premium version probably sometime in Q3, okay, which will be subscription-based.
And what feature differences will that be, or you want to wait on that announcement?
Well, we're going to add a little bit more collaboration features.
Okay.
We're talking to some people
If businesses wanted to use this.
Exactly.
The stuff that would be really compelling to them.
Version control and tracking and things like that.
Well, we actually have version control in the free online version.
Cool.
But what we're going to add for small, medium-sized businesses is the ability to administer groups of individuals.
To have access to the document.
Exactly. So you can set security.
Which is very difficult, of course, if you've got a Word document in your system, you want someone else's notes, you got to email it to them. And then you get it back and you do track changes, you try to merge it, especially if you send it to multiple people. So this way you're sending in all to one page and people just edit it as they go. I could see that as a major feature in small business.
What other types of documents can you open?
So you can open
Excel?
Doc, XLS, and PPT. So
which
Word,
is PowerPoint.
Yeah. Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. You can also open RTF documents and things like that. But
so the product right now that you have online, is that similar to what's being released on Monday, or is there some different?
We do have a current version that's online right now. There are some major changes that are going on. One of them is as I mentioned, the lightweight preview feature so that you can actually view the document right away. If you want to do some of the power edit features, that's some of the stuff that we have currently going on right now. Another addition is that we're adding the collaboration features. So you can go in and invite others to share documents, and they can either be readers or co-editors.
And will that exist on Monday as well?
That's existing on Monday.
All right. So for all our podcast listeners, probably by the time you hear this, it'll be Monday, and you can go to thinkfree.com. Of course, you can go to geekspeak.org and learn all about this as well. But thinkfree.com is launching these new products, this new version of its suite of online office editing apps. And you can take a look at that right now to some degree. But on Monday, April 24th, you'll get a full brain excitement, I guess. I did a horrible segue on that one. In any case, take a look at thinkfree.com. And Jonathan, I'd like you to wait here with us and answer calls as we invite people in just a minute or two. Business with Pleasure supports this program, a full-service business center in Felton offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. You're listening to Geek Speak. Phone answer and fellow geek Rick Philman awaits your call with questions and comments of technology. We'll take any calls today. That's right. Anything you'd like to ask us, especially about technology, we'll take right now at 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. On Monday morning, Talk of the Bay, KOSP's Robert Poley will talk with Harvey Picar, creator of the autobiographical comic book American Splendor, about his early career as a street fighter, the making of the American Splendor movie, and his falling out with David Letterman. Picar will also discuss his new graphic novel, Ego and Hubris, the Michael Malice story. That's Monday morning at 10 a.m. on Talk of the Bay.
I'm there.
Yeah, no kidding. That's Sean. That's right up your alley. I'm going to have to listen to that one, too. GeekSpeak is supported by a business with Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at SantaCruzElectronics.com. At KOSP.org, you can find out the commentaries that KOSP airs on First Person Singular each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also find information on how you can submit commentary for First Person Singular on KOSP.org. GeekSpeak is supported by CruiseIO Internet, offering DSL, broadband, computer rentals, and tune-ups. CruiseIO has retail stores, in downtown Santa Cruz and Watsonville. More information can be found online at cruiseio.com or by calling 459-6301. And if you'd like to call in now to this program, GeekSpeak, you're welcome to do so. We'll take your calls of questions of technology, especially Web 2.0 stuff, but any kind of thing you'd like to ask about your computer problems, dilemmas, whatnot, we're here to help and to support you. We just might not have all the answers, but we'll definitely give it a shot. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or, of course, you can go to the Internet. Well, go to our website, geekspeak.org, and click on Contact Us. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning, Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and, of course, our guest, Jonathan Crow from Think Free, Inc. We're talking about the products they're going to be releasing on Monday. So, Jonathan, thank you. We'll continue our discussion as we take in calls. There's a lot of similarities between the Web 2.0 and the early web. Little companies starting up, and some kind of quite a bit of discussion about this. Whether companies are starting to be purchased, they're not starting to get VC anymore, because getting VC for web companies is very hard because of the whole .com bust. But doing it in a sense of, we want to do this product really well so that Google buys us or Microsoft buys us or Yahoo buys us, is kind of a thing that's underwriting a lot of these apps. And there's probably a bit of discussion, probably too much, about whether this company is trying to be bought or not. What's your take for Think Free, and can you address that?
Sure. Well, Think Free is actually owned by a Korean company called Hansoft. They're one of the largest office productivity suite manufacturers in Korea. And it's actually an interesting story. Hansoft owns about 75% of the office productivity market in Korea. It's the only It's the only country that Microsoft hasn't been able to dominate.
Okay. So this company's a competitor to Microsoft.
Yes.
And they own you guys.
Yes.
All right. Well, that means you're not trying to be sold by Microsoft.
Exactly. We don't have to go shop ourselves around.
That's nice. Yeah, so that means you got a paycheck, regular paycheck and stuff. Huh?
Yeah.
That's kind of convenient.
It helps.
From Castorville, Ron, welcome to GeekSpeak. Hello, Ron.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, it's probably really simple for you guys. I'm a non-geek, and when I click on a URL to go to a site off a link, I usually get a minimized version of the page, and I have to click on maximize to get a full-size page. Is there a way that I can...
When you say a minimize, meaning it's down in the taskbar?
No, it's actually about half size on the page, so I have to hit on the right by the minimize and the maximize to enlarge it. I have to hit near the little red cross on the top.
Yeah. So where's the window when it actually starts up?
It's kind of in the middle of the page.
Oh, but just smaller than you want it to
be. Yeah, and every time I go somewhere, I have to then click something else to make it full size. You know, I mean,
Are you ever connecting to this machine remotely?
Am I connecting to it remotely?
Yeah.
I'm just sitting right in front of it.
What a weird question.
This happens to me when I use Windows has a feature where I can connect to my desktop computer from my notebook, you know, remotely.
No.
And when I get back to my desktop and log in, all my windows are, like, minimized.
Okay.
I've seen that before.
Are you using Internet Explorer or Firefox?
No, not Firefox. I'm just on Internet Explorer.
Okay, I've got a really good solution for you.
Okay.
Switch to Firefox. No, seriously, it's really not that hard to do. You download Fire... Don't use the Mozilla package. It's too big. But go down, download Firefox, and you won't have this problem.
This is a PC, right? Solution.
Yes.
All right. Go to Windows Explorer.
Okay.
And then go to Tools.
Yeah. Okay.
And then go to Folder Options.
But it's a browser that he's dealing with, not a...
It doesn't matter.
Huh. It doesn't have folder options, as I see.
Not Internet Explorer. You have to go to Windows Explorer.
Wait, Windows Explorer is going to affect his Internet Explorer?
Well, what it is there's folder options, and you go to View. In there is where you have your advanced settings for how you view Windows or different folders. And one of those is remember each folder's view settings.
Yeah, but that's for folders.
That's for everything in Windows.
Everything in Windows?
Yeah. So once you maximize your page and close it, it should remember that. So next time you open it up, it's maximized again. Or if you've got to drag to a certain size.
I'll give that a shot. I am skeptical of that. I know that Firefox will solve this problem. Also, Internet Explorer, not such a good browser.
Yeah, but that's you're putting a Band-Aid on.
No, Internet Explorer is a horrible application.
I agree,
Microsoft,
Lyle.
I mean, Microsoft is doing a poor job of supporting its browser.
So this it only affects Internet Explorer then, nothing else.
Okay, guys.
So the one other thing, if you don't want to do that, have you tried just opening Internet Explorer, maximizing the window? Actually, don't maximize the window. Resize the window to as big as you can get.
Drag it bigger.
Drag it bigger. Then close that, and then open it again. If it hasn't memorized that setting, it concerns me.
Okay, because, you know, it's just, it's I don't know, it's a simple little thing, but you have to do it every time.
It will not open it in maximized view. I don't think you're ever going to get that. So just resize the window to the fullest size you can manually, okay. And then close
that
it.
May be viewable
I think that's going
to
work.
You know what? If you still have problems, shoot an email to us. Go to geekspeak.org, shoot an email. Give you the directions on.
Okay, that would be great if you'd email me back sometime in the future. And I really appreciate you guys. I love this program.
Great. Thank you, Ron.
You know, it's like listening to another world on my little crystal set, you know? And that's where I'm at, crystal set age, old guys. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Ron, for the call.
Bye now.
We're on Mars looking down.
All right, we're going to go ahead and go to Salinas. David, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, David. Thank you for taking my call.
It's a pleasure. What's your question?
Actually, my question is for the gentleman from Think Free.
Jonathan.
And, yes, I wanted to know if there was any plans to support Microsoft Project in the future.
The big beast of the Office suite.
Yeah, not at this point in time. We really want to make sure that we have the compatibility issues with Microsoft Office down. One of the things they're doing is they're going to be moving over in the next year to,
who's they?
Well, Microsoft is going to be moving over in the next
unknown amount of time
year, but you know
to what?
Yeah, to XML.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be changing their Office formats.
Oh yeah.
And so we actually already support XML, so I don't think it's going to be
easier for people to support backwards compatibility with Microsoft.
This point in time, no supply.
Now, David, I'm assuming that you use Microsoft Project and you're stuck in an app and you'd like to have other solutions?
I'm in a situation where we have one license and, of course, therefore we can't share the project plans, except for if we export them or print them out.
But then they're not really editable.
Then they're not editable.
Yeah, it's Microsoft Project's one of those apps that when you start using it, your entire business flow relies on it. And then it's kind of, you're stuck with that app. I know there are solutions to that problem. And if anyone is using something other than using something that's compatible or can read MS Project documents, please let us know. Our phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We invite you to be an extra geek to help us out on this. Microsoft Project's definitely one of those kind of trapped applications, and I'd love to hear about some solutions. Of course, you can email us anytime. Just go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. David, thank you very much for the call. Good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck. All right, from Santa Cruz. Hal, welcome to GeekSpeak. Hello, Hal.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I started carrying my Outlook PST files on a portable hard drive to ease the difficulty of traveling and coming back to the office and having to transfer all my PSTs back and forth. And it's worked pretty well. There's one little glitch every once in a while. It doesn't find my personal address. Mm-hmm. Well, and I know how to deal with it when it happens, but it's cumbersome. But I want to do this more broadly with my data files, and also ideally with some of my applications. And I wonder if you can give me some quick pointers on how to do it, and if there are going to be some limitations, say with the Office Suite or other products.
So you can open an application you have on anybody else's machine.
On any machine, sure.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I actually, I'm not looking for that so much as just between my laptop and my desktop.
Okay.
For the time being, anyway, that's fine. I'm always at one or the other computer.
Well, using a portable drive makes a lot of sense, saving all your data to that, and of course your settings data, like your PST files as well.
Another solution is storing them online. One of the advantages of storing them online is that you also have the advantage of having a backup whenever you need it. So if your hard drive goes down, you always have the online version available. And if you are working with other people, you don't have to worry about version control, because the latest version is always the copy you see most recently. You can go back to some of the previous versions, but you
think it'd be a little cumbersome to copy your PST file up and down from the internet.
Yeah, PST,
that wouldn't work. It's a huge document.
No. But if we're talking about just your data files, you can actually store them online and use the applications online.
Or I'm not interested in storing them online.
Okay.
I really want to have them, because I don't always have access to the internet, or certainly not at a good speed.
Yeah, it sounds like what you're really asking for is a sync app that uses your drive, and every time you plug it to both your machines, it syncs your data back.
Exactly.
That's exactly what you want. And I know some kind of industrial strength sync applications like Retrospect and stuff, which are much more for backup. I don't have a clean suggestion for you on doing this. Again, I invite people to call in or email us with suggestions to help Hal out on syncing between a laptop and a desktop. There are multiple solutions in this space. I just don't have one off the top of my head. Thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
And keep listening to GeekSpeak. I'm sure that we'll come up with something. I think I'd like to do a show on that. I do quite a bit of space between a desktop and a laptop, and I think Mr. Cleveland does as well, which is always if a couple of geeks do it, then that means that it's something we're interested in talking about. All right, Watsonville. Judith, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question for the gentleman from ThinkFree.
Sure.
And I was just wondering, I have an Apple computer, a Mac, and my main word processing program is AppleWorks 6, and I was wondering if documents from that would be supported by the online programming.
Jonathan, does ThinkFree open... What is it again? AppleWorks 6?
We haven't really done a lot of testing on AppleWorks 6, so I can't really talk to that one. Can you save the document as an RTF file? Or?
Yeah, I think I can save it as a RTF file.
Then we can definitely work with that.
Okay.
But it's not a solution to just be able to open all your docs up, unfortunately. Yeah, that's difficult. How long have you been using that app?
Which, the AppleWorks?
Yeah, AppleWorks, yeah.
Well, I've had my computer since about 2004.
Yeah. I think you want to do a migration at some point soon.
Because one of the other things that I do have that I could use is I have Pages.
Pages?
Are you familiar? I am part of the iWork suite.
Oh, okay.
And in that, I actually can save things as Word documents, so I could move things from one.
I wouldn't necessarily suggest that you transfer over to Word, but if your documents don't have a lot of complications, a rich text document, RTF, rich text format, is a really great format. You know, you got the bold, you got the bullet points, you got headlines and so on, and it's a pretty good, and it's very... it's open to almost everybody that does editing of documents. So I'd kind of recommend that, unless, of course, you've got a lot of tables or things that don't get supported very well. Good luck.
Okay.
No problem. Sorry. Backwards compatibility. Thank you very much for the call.
Mm-hmm.
We are taking calls with questions and comments about technology. We seem to have just, hit three in a row. We weren't able to answer very well, but that's just an anomaly. That doesn't normally happen. So give us a ring anyway, especially if it's something you know we can help with. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Trox. The Geeks This Morning, Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, and, of course, Jonathan Crow, our guest, Director of Marketing from ThinkFree. ThinkFree, Inc. is about to launch on Monday its newest version of their online office editing applications. Supports Word documents, Excel documents, and PowerPoint documents. You can edit them. You can save them as PDF. You can save them on their site. Pretty neat
so
tools.
With that intro, I'm half expecting folks to call in going, okay, 2 + 2, 4. We got it. Yeah.
Gosh, that'd be great if people ask questions like that. I know I can answer that. What we need to do is whoever calls in next, we need to answer it very authoritatively, even if we have no idea what we're talking about. Because no one will know. Well, I guess people will know. Darn, we have to be
which
accurate.
Is going to win, Blu-ray or HD DVD? HD DVD.
Blu-ray. Oh, no. Phone number is 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. I'm going to give those again in a second because the phone lines are open and you're welcome to call us right now with technical questions, comments about technology, especially about Web 2.0 stuff, but any kind of questions you have about your computer or technology, the world we live in. 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Jonathan, well, let me ask Sean a question, actually, because Sean, you've actually used the app the most. You did the screen capture and stuff. What do you think of their word editing capabilities online?
I'm impressed by how fast it is. I uploaded a Word document, and it was up there very quickly, and I was able to view it and edit it. I emailed it to the geeks. Hasn't come through yet, but I'm just sitting here playing with it, and I'm very impressed. Especially with the PowerPoint feature, I mean, you can really create a PowerPoint presentation from scratch with their functions.
From scratch, you can.
Yeah, we can actually create
those docs too.
Oh, those docs as well. And,
well, PowerPoint's a big one for that. I'm on a Mac, and I can't make PowerPoint documents without getting that application.
So, if you want to go to library, log into use their computer, you could actually create. You could do work.
Real work. Online.
Online. And save it somewhere and then go home and grab it.
Well, and the great thing is that, again, these are compatible with Microsoft Office so that you can email these files or share them with other people. And if they're using Microsoft Office, there's not a problem.
I know how I'm going to do it. I know how I'm going to use this. I'm going to be using this by when I receive these Word documents, I don't have to launch Word.
Exactly.
I'll just upload them to the server and then view them. Because I don't like running Word on any platform.
You talked about Flickr a little while ago. We actually just integrated Flickr. So you know that feature about insert image?
Yeah.
Well, along with being able to insert an image from your desktop or clip art, we can actually insert an image from Flickr.
Oh, that's nice.
And they have something called the Creative Commons license. And so you can choose.
Search and find only Creative Commons docs.
Exactly.
Yeah, this whole idea of like open images and copyright and stuff, Creative Commons is a group that's kind of defined a space where it says these documents you can use for any purposes you want. And people upload and tag things at Flickr, which are a whole bunch of images, and you can choose to use those in different ways.
Except Creative Commons is more, it's a bit more granular than that. It's more of just like the cookie cutter, this is what rights I want to assign for that. So it becomes, you don't need a lawyer to figure out how you can use it.
Right.
Exactly.
So what you're saying is that in your app, if you wanted like clip art, traditionally called clip art, you would go add image from Flickr and do some searching, find something that's open to you to use, free to use, that matches your discussion, and then put it back in your image.
Right.
Your
document. You can specify, I want to use this for commercial or non-commercial purposes. I want to make a derivative work of this, or, I don't want to be allowed to do that, or whatever. But the biggest part is attribution. Part of Creative Commons says you need to make sure that you properly give credit to whoever created this photo. And of course, if you go to Flickr, you can manually download the image and put it into a document. We automate that process and we automate the attribution so that the person's name is on the document. So even if you print it out,
cool.
It's there.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
I like that. All right. So that of course, that's using Flickr, which is FLICKR.com. Of course, Miles is going to add that to our page in a little bit, Flickr, so that people know that. It's a great image sharing app or web app, and it's one of those examples of Web 2.0 that kind of they make an API, then you can use that API to in your online application, which, of course, is at thinkfree.com. We're going to go ahead and start taking some calls. I think we've got Marina from Capitola. Welcome to GeekSpeak. Oh, Marina from Santa Cruz? Hi.
Yes.
Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. My question is that I'm running on one of my computers an OS 10.2, and I'm trying to download a program to run in the terminal. And the problem is that it doesn't have a good compiler. And in order to run the program, I need to be able to use a good compiler. And I talked to the programmer, and they told me that I needed to download a GCC.
Okay, it's actually easier than that on a Macintosh environment. Macintosh is pretty good with their developers. They have a whole application suite that you install, which is called Developer, Apple Developer, I believe.
Okay, I did that. The problem is, I did that for the 10.3, and it works perfect.
Great.
The problem is that it doesn't work for 10.2. Like, you have to be able to download it onto something on a... I'm wondering whether or not... And he had told me that...
You said it works perfectly or doesn't work perfectly?
It works perfectly on 10.3.
Okay, but you have a 10.2 machine?
Yes.
Okay.
He said that I could just go to, the GNU.org website and do it, but I don't exactly know how to do it. Like, I went there...
What you need to do is find the developer tools for 10.2. If you have the 10.2 disk, sometimes they come on the second disk. Install that. They're going to be the older versions of the developer, but they'll have a GCC. One other thing that you need to understand on a Macintosh environment, sometimes the GCC is a different version than you need to run. And there's actually a command line that you can run to set what C compiler you're going to use. I don't recall the actual name of that, unfortunately. Miles, have you done much compilation on a Mac?
Well, I did a little bit of it, but it was by no means straightforward and easy.
What's the app that you're trying to create?
The application?
Yeah.
It's an application that looks at, it uses MCMC sort of statistics, and it's a science sort of program that looks at populations and...
Do you have access to 10.3 machine?
I do, but the problem is that I'm trying to utilize this old computer, this old iMac.
Okay. So what I would recommend is compiling this thing in 10.3, and then before you actually do the make install, take that whole package and then put it over on your 10.2 machine and do the make install on there. Because the make install will probably function.
But when I say make install, it says it doesn't understand that.
Man.
Yeah, I know.
I think that we're going to have to say...
Couldn't you just called in and said, what's 2 plus 2?
I know, you could have done that for us. Instead, you're asking how to compile an application I don't know about on an operating system I'm not using anymore. I mean, come on! That's a tough one. I'm sorry. I'm not going to have a simple solution for you.
Okay.
But definitely get the developer tools for 10.2, and you might just get lucky.
There's no way of just... Is there any way of just downloading the compiler without developer?
I mean, yes, there probably is, but don't do that.
The developer.apple.com?
Yeah, download Apple's package, because it's going to have all... You're going to want it to do the compiling on a Mac machine.
Yeah.
The other ways are... Yeah, there'd be dragons.
Yeah.
I do have the developer tools for the 10.3, and it works fine and everything, but... I was trying to utilize this 10.2, and I couldn't find any developer tools for it.
So. Yeah, it's difficult. Good luck.
All right. Thanks.
All right. You know, actually, please feel free to email me. I've got a few other suggestions that might work. I just have to do some research on them.
I'm concerned.
You're concerned because we're failing miserably to answer calls successfully?
How people spend their Saturdays.
Compiling science projects? That is cool.
The sun's out.
Oh, come on. You're up till 3 last night making computers.
The sun wasn't out at 3.
Colin from Marino, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi.
Are you in Marino?
Yeah.
Where's Marino?
Marina, it's just...
Oh, Marina. Okay, it was...
In North Monterey.
Sure, I know where Marina is, but... Okay, in any case, what's your question?
Yeah, hi. Colin Gallagher out of Marina. Well, I'm calling in because I got this question on security, and you have this program that, that basically you can edit your Word documents or your PowerPoint and so forth online, right? And my question is... relating to security issues, what are some of the how do you guard against people, accessing your information you may have stored online? I guess in an unauthorized way, and is your product set up so that it can facilitate people that would be doing a work in a group environment, maybe online telecommuting, that kind of thing?
Sure, we actually have an L4 switch that filters out any hackers that might want to come into our system. So there's that system level. We also have document level security. We assign tickets to documents so that you're only able to access the documents that you're authorized to do that on. In a group environment, what you would be able to do is share with other individuals, and they can either be registered on our system or not. It all depends on what level of collaboration you want to do, but simply just invite them through their email address and they can get in there and
make a free account to edit, kind of thing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The security issue is an interesting one because theoretically you've got a staff of database administrators and they have access to the database, you know, because they have to administer it and such. Could one of them go ahead and download your Word documents and see them?
Oh.
I mean, that's kind of true even at a bank, too, right? A bank person that's a database administrator could theoretically hack into the network and do some bad things. That is one of those things that happens when you trust a provider of service that they will be fair to you.
Exactly.
Is that the security you're asking about?
I was thinking more in terms of large groups. For example, you know, your local government users kind of situation. If you had, local government, planning or public works department, trying to manage security for documents that are being edited by employees that would be off-site or in their homes, that kind of thing. I'm not mistaken, I think there's Microsoft Office that's come out with some beta online product too. And how does your product differ from that?
So Office Live is what you're talking about. They came out with it earlier this year. And one of the things that Office Live still assumes is that you have Word, PowerPoint, and Excel loaded on your desktop. So
yours, you don't need that.
I'm sorry?
Yours, you don't need that. Then.
Exactly. They're all available. The applications are available online. So you can access them online. And so not only do you have to, with Microsoft Office do you have to purchase the desktop versions of their applications, but Office Live is also ad revenue supported, so they get you coming and going.
so you're charged for the online service, and of course you have to have the application that you had to pay for originally anyway.
The online service is ad supported, so right. You're not charged for it, but
you kind of are.
Yeah, you are.
The important thing is you actually have to have Office on your local machine to
exactly.
make this work.
Exactly.
And that, of course, is one of the things you try to get away from when you're getting away from using it. I mean, I would like to not have to. I mean, I think I'm going to start not installing Office Suite on my machines, especially the ones I don't use as much, because it just costs extra license for every seat that you use. We did have a call from Capitola, Gretchen, asking about ThinkFree support of Access databases, another Office kind of app. You don't support it, right?
Yeah, we do have a lot of discussions going on around about supporting databases and being able to do that. At this point in time, we don't really have any plans to. There are a lot of other applications that are freely available, MySQL.
Databases.
Exactly.
Well, the thing with Access, and it's comparable in a lot of ways to Apple's FileMaker, is that it's kind of a rapid application development around a database. Unlike a standalone good database, it's kind of this mishmash app that does data functions. And once you get into that situation, especially if you have someone that's developed something, kind of stuck. I mean, it's not a pretty picture. It is an application environment. It's just as trapping, if you will, as an operating system for an application. So,
it certainly is.
I think we're going to say goodbye to Colin. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
And thank you for Gretchen for calling in as well, of course, and to everybody that called in today. Thank you for making Geek Speak what it is. Without you calling in, no one would know how inept we are at answering questions effectively. So thank you very much for that. Where is all the stuff I'm supposed to do? Talk about ineptitude. I'm full of it today. GeekSpeak is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer parts and computers and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Live Oak Parking Project has begun. Park in Juana's parking lot on weekends between 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. to avoid getting a ticket. Okay, maybe that's something for personal stuff. KOSP's Live at Lunch music sessions are now available as podcasts at kosp.org. These sessions are recorded live in our studios and broadcasted on KOSP. Podcasting is free and allows these performances to be automatically downloaded to your computer. Just go to kosp.org and click on podcast to find instructions and subscribe. Of course, you can subscribe to geekspeak.org as well by going to kosp.org. You can get our shows. We've got, 300 shows up there. So if you want to waste the rest of your life, you're welcome to do so. Our guest today, Jonathan Crowe, Director of Marketing for ThinkFree, Inc. has a decade of experience in marketing and sales, and on Monday, helping to launch the Think Free Inc. app suite, the new suite of online office editing tools. You can edit Word documents, Excel documents, and PowerPoint documents online. You can share them. It's free. You get a lot of space. It's kind of cool. So check it out. It's a whole part of the Web 2.0 movement, I would assume. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
The Geeks Today, Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBH San Otto, on the web at kosp.org. For KOSP and Geek Speak, I'm Lyle Troxell.